You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Small business optimism is plummeting after months of being targeted. It's the backbone of our economy, and it needs help. The three of us talking here today together, Becky Kolmeinen, Judy Moran, and myself, Linda Martinelli, are all small business owners, so we can relate to what's happening in small business around the country. All of us are entrepreneurs, and we have been willing at some point in our life to take on the challenges of owning a small business. And there are many. There are taxes and paperwork and more paperwork and things that you have to turn in timely and all of those things that kind of drive us crazy and take us away from that which we love the most, which is the entrepreneurial spirit of running a small business, of serving people, of, you know, making a success of something from nothing. All of those are exciting. But what's happening now, in addition to the usual challenges that we always have in running small businesses, is that we have had a year of COVID, we have had a year of shutdowns, and now with the new administration, we have lots and lots of more regulations, more employee restrictions, depending on what state you're in. So you have your federal laws and then you have your state laws, and there are more coming. So just as we're coming out of COVID, they want to raise the minimum wage, which affects so, so many small businesses. People have not been able to pay rent. People are backlogged in rent and wondering how they're ever going to catch up with rent. We have businesses that are closing by the thousands permanently. The stimulus that was supposed to be helpful to small business really is not a help to small business. So that kind of went out the window. It might be a help to people making $1,400 checks or less, depending on what they made, but it's not really going to help small businesses in any way, shape, or form. So now they want to, like I said, raise the minimum wage, which is a big deal to business. And they want to pass the anti-gig and independent contractor bill, which is another big deal. And why is that a big deal? Because people that might say sell for you part-time, they're not really on your payroll, they just get a commission when they sell something, are now going to have to be paid as employees. That means that you have to pay more employees' taxes and unemployment, and then you have to think about insurance and all these different things. So the government continues to get in the way of small business, and small business is the backbone of America. And I'm just wondering where we're going to go about this and how you ladies feel being small business owners as well about new regulations, new minimum wages, coming out of COVID. What's your thoughts?
You know, my business is unique. I'm a voice talent and I'm an independent. I'm a sole proprietor. I have no employees, but my work has been affected by the pandemic, no question. Initially, when the pandemic began a year ago, my work skyrocketed because I do a lot of on-hold messaging along with e-learning and tutorials. But that on-hold messaging, which is worldwide, I actually do some things for places in Dubai, and they were constantly changing their messages due to lockdowns and restrictions and changes in protocol. And so business was booming. And then after the election, and probably beginning December 1st, things went cold, and they've been cold. They're just now slowly trickling back in, and it's been very depressing for me to have work hit such a bump in the road, and the business owners telling me that they've been at a standstill because they're waiting on their fourth quarter numbers. They are not sure how they're going to proceed. And everybody's kind of holding on to that money because people have been unsure about what's going to happen with regard to their hiring and their performance and their future. And it's affected me. And it's kind of depressing and a little scary. So I continue to always look for new work, but there's no question the small business owner is hit the hardest. And like you said, Linda, we are the backbone of the country.
Becky, I have a question. Your customers that you do voices for, are they mostly small businesses or are they large businesses?
Both, to be fair. They both are. I do work for a company that the client hires them to hire voice talent. And so I do a lot of work for the pharmaceutical company Merck. And those are large e-learning scripts that I read for them. And the smaller ones are the on-hold messaging, but that on-hold messaging, it's more high volume because they're everything from doctor's office, dentist's office, to the 5-star hotels in New York City and restaurants. And I'm going to name drop even Bobby Flay's restaurant in New York City. And those are things I consider the small, but also the very large. Everybody's being affected.
Well, they have, but my thought is that many, many big businesses stayed open during the pandemic, but the small businesses were forced to shut down. So I'm wondering, you know, where the hole is in your work so much. Is it with all the businesses, small and large, or more with the small?
No, it seems to be all. And I'm surprised with the large. With one of the large, they say that they are reorganizing, which is never a good thing to hear, because history has shown me that when someone says, we're going to reorganize, that usually means people are going to be let go. There are different people coming in at the top. The company may have been purchased or sold. And in other places, I've been told, we have to wait on the fourth quarter to see how we're doing. And then I don't hear and I don't hear. I send an email about every 2 weeks and no responses. So I don't know. And yet they're the same companies that say either they've been using me and say, no, we love you. You're good. Everything is good. It's just, it's us. It's me, not you. Or it's the new one that I've been waiting on that's just saying, no, I've got to wait and find out if we can still hire. We want to hire. We love you. We want you on the list, but I've got to wait and find out. So are they waiting on what? I'm not really sure.
You know, it's interesting because when I look at the people who are in power and making these decisions, right, about keeping the economy closed. And we talked a little bit about this the last time we chitty chatted, but it seems like the states that are run by Democrats are staying closed a lot longer. They closed earlier. They closed a lot more businesses, and they were a lot more restricted. And even though their population suffered greatly, they held firm, regardless of what the science was saying. So when I look at, when I mean, we have a small business, we have employees, and we, you know, we didn't get any stimulus checks. Okay. I remember I was talking to a friend of mine who said, you know, we were talking about socialism and blah, blah, blah. And I said, he said, you sure cashed your stimulus check, didn't you? And I said, well, I didn't get one. Excuse me, because I own my own business. Whatever I got was just to pay my employees' salary with the guarantee that I would not let them go. It didn't cover my expenses, my husband's expenses. And the people that are making these decisions, like, for instance, in Michigan, Governor Whitmer, has never held an actual job. She has been in politics from day one. She has worked for the government her whole entire life and has no idea whatsoever what it's like to eat what you kill. Because that's what we do. We eat what we kill. And if I produce, then my family eats food. If I don't produce, if Brian doesn't produce, then we go hungry. I pay my employees before I pay myself. Every single time I make sure that their benefits are paid for. I made a commitment and a promise to them. So we're the last ones to get paid. And we took the risk. And we took the risk because we thought it was the American dream that it would pay off someday. And for years, we worked our butts off, made sacrifices. And now with the new administration, I mean, they are going to tax the heck out of us. They're going to put more restrictions on us. And they're going to say, you can't do business. And if you do business, it has to look like this. And so the rules constantly change by people like our President Biden, who has been a lifetime politician. Why is he a multimillionaire? He's only supposed to be making a couple hundred grand a year, max. Okay. I don't understand how he's a multimillionaire when he's never actually held down a job or been, you know, responsible really for others.
I think that part is a whole nother show, Judy. But you know, what my husband and I always say is that people in government jobs, they know how to spend money, but they have no idea how to make money. And that's the problem, is that they don't know how to make money. And we are the people who know how to make money, and they are spending our money that we make. And that is the problem. And, you know, you just take something like the gas tax, the gases, or the whole gas price. It's not just the gas tax, depending on what state you're in. But the price of gasoline has gone up dramatically since Biden has been president. And that affects all of us and all of our businesses in so many ways. Because what happens? UPS goes up, FedEx goes up. All of our expenses go up. Our salespeople, if you have salespeople and maybe they have a gas allowance or just your own driving to work, it costs you more. So what happens then is that we all have to raise our prices in order to survive. And ultimately, there is no net gain to the public. So I just don't understand. This is so simple as 2 + 2 in economics, that if you start overtaxing and raising prices on small business owners and their cost of doing business, and you overregulate them and you make them have to pay more money in order to do business, somebody has to pay for that. So when they pay for that, then you go and say, well, they're not making enough money, so now we're going to give them a bigger check. And the whole cycle starts over again. It makes no sense. We continue to do this in our country, and it's just a never-ending cycle.
Well, I agree with you. It just drives me completely crazy. You know, we had, I remember my friend, very good friend, owns a salon, and she actually specializes in hair replacement for people who have medical issues and lose their hair. So for chemo patients, patients with alopecia, you know, anybody who struggles with that. And her wigs, they're a little expensive, but, you know, it was awful. So she got shut down in the first wave, right? And she, I don't know why, who knows why, she didn't qualify, right? Didn't qualify for the big stimulus loan or whatever. And so, oh my gosh. So she hung in there, but she had to shut down completely. Then she was allowed to reopen. And then there was a period where, you know, things got a little rough again. And we thought that they were going to get shut down again. And she said, Jude, I can't survive another shutdown. I can't survive. And I can understand, we had this barber in Owosso, right, Beck, who he took clients anyways because he had to, because he had to feed his family, okay?
Yeah.
And well, he took client, and what happened? They arrested the guy. They arrested him for cutting hair. It just boggles my mind. It boggles my mind. And I have discussions with people who are all act like I'm evil because, you know, because I want our economy to stay open. And they say, well, you're sacrificing people's lives. And I said, no, I am not sacrificing people's lives. And then they come back and I'm going to tell you that these are people that work for the state of Michigan. Okay. They worked for MEA, which is the teachers union. Okay. So they worked for the unions, they worked for the government, and they're telling me, oh, they said in a very shaming tone, it's all about the money, isn't it? No. I mean, yes, but no, I got to have money to feed my family and to make sure my employees can feed their families and the commitments that I've made. But I'm telling you today, I don't, you know, you guys, you don't show up for work, you still get your paycheck. You work for the government, right? You get all those incredible fancy benefits and you didn't risk a damn thing. Excuse me. You didn't risk anything. Okay. You didn't risk anything. I've risked everything. And now when it's, you know, when I'm hoping that there'll be a payoff somewhere, I'm evil. I'm the evil Judy.
Real quick for both of you, Becky, what would make you feel like some optimism can come back in business? What one thing?
Well, that's a
ordering
good
a martini at the restaurant.
I think so.
Ice and an ice cold martini glass, please, with blue cheese stuffed olives, two of them.
Well, that can't hurt.
No. You know, that's a good question. I feel like I'm being told that it's due to economic restraints at the moment that things aren't moving forward. So I feel like a lot of this is out of my control. I don't have any questions. I mean, and this is going to sound egotistical, but because of the conversations that I've had with the people that I work with, I'm not concerned that the lack of work is any fault of my own. I have no question about that whatsoever, but do believe that, and I'm still employed by these people, that their hands are tied. And their hands are tied either by their company or the concerns that they have about moving forward. So I guess the only way that's going to improve for my situation is when the economy starts improving. And is that going to happen before COVID is over? I doubt it.
Well, I don't know when COVID's going to be over. So for me to have optimism, again, it is 100% opening the economy, open everything, open the schools, open the businesses. And we have the most vaccines administered out of any country in the world at this point. And we're administering more every day. And we are ready to open this country. And these states that are keeping it close need to open up and let people get back to their lives.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Hi, Ladies of Liberty fans. You're here with Linda Martinelli, Judy Moran, and Becky Kolminen. Three amazing, fabulously smart, gorgeous, funny, God-loving women. And we're here to just chat about food. I love food. Food. I love the subject on so many levels. I love to cook. I love to eat. I love to taste new things. I'm not picky. I love to try everything. I learned my love of food really generationally from my grannies, Granny Rose, Granny Catherine, and my dad and my mom both loved to cook. And now I have to say, I love myself as a cook. I love myself as a cook. I am so darn good. I'm telling you, it is. I cook. I like the old world cooking style. So I remember we used to run in the kitchen and my grannies would be cooking away. And we'd run in, "What are you making, Granny?" And they'd say, "Makagigi, now get out of here." And I never knew what makagigi was, but it was always tasty. Whatever it was she was making, that was it, right? Whether it was roasted chicken or pasta or nalasniki or whatever, we're Polish and Ukrainian. But both my grandmothers were fantastic cooks. My Granny Catherine was the one of the head cooks in the Chrysler dining room. And when she retired, they gave her a whole set of silver with a C on it. She spelled Catherine with a C. And so I always thought it was for Catherine, but it was really for Chrysler. But right. Anyway, food is interesting because I didn't realize it, but I know that that's how I love my people. If I love you, I'm going to cook for you. If you're sick, I'm going to bring you my homemade chicken noodle soup with the old Polish noodles. I'm going to love you with food. And what is interesting is if I look across all of the different cultures all around the world, and people meet over food. When you have, you make a new friend, it doesn't matter what culture, it seems like one family will make a feast and bring it over to the new family, to the new friendship. And breaking bread has always been, I think, a way to cross borders, to heal rifts and arguments, to celebrate incredible moments, and also really, really grieve sadness. I mean, you celebrate weddings with great feasts, and then what happens when somebody passes away and you have the 3 days of Shiva or your 3 days of mourning for the funeral? And what have people bring food? So much food, they bring food to your house. I remember when I gave birth to my first child, people, they had this whole sign-up sheet where all my friends and everybody in the neighborhood took turns bringing us food. And it is, to me, it's just a way to love on people. And it's a way to break barriers, too, or to learn about somebody's culture and pass that olive leaf, you know?
That everything you've stated just has this beautiful picture of people enjoying food and what that does positively for relationships and life. And when someone encounters digestive issues as a result of the way food has changed over the last century, it can be a very difficult and frustrating obstacle to participate with that sort of beautiful situation, circumstances. I was diagnosed as not quite celiac, which is an allergy to wheat gluten, but it's called a sensitivity to gluten. So I can't eat things made with wheat. And that kind of destroyed my life for a time and didn't understand it. This was about 12 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago. I was a carboholic. Hi, my name is Becky. I'm a carboholic. And I was eating lots of bread and pastas and English muffins and muffins and all that good stuff. Well, one of the things that I learned is that the food that we eat today is not the food of our grandparents and our great-grandparents. And some of the things that are done just to the making of a loaf of bread is atrocious. They literally take the kernel, I believe it might be the right term, of the wheat and strip it of all of its nutrients. And the bread that you see mass produced is basically filler and offers little to no nutritional value. And I've had to see a nutritionist and I've had to be on supplements. I got down to a dangerously low weight. I thought I was going to die, quite seriously, and had to learn to eat differently and ended up actually healing my body through food, through the right foods. So food has been kind of a big thing for me. And at first, this was most difficult to learn how to eat really well and stop eating. I remember my last meal. I call it my last meal because I forever changed. After the last time that I ate, what was my favorite dinner at the time? I'm embarrassed to even say this, so judge away. But Thor and my daughter went out for a movie and I stayed home and I had pasta Alfredo, chicken Alfredo. So you got that beautiful buttery cream, thick cream sauce with the thick linguine pasta. And then I had garlic bread with it. Probably two big old pieces of garlic bread. I had wine. And then I also had a brownie crushed in a bowl of ice cream with hot fudge for dessert. Yeah.
That's great.
I did. And then I was sick all night. Now, this wasn't the first time that I was sick. This had happened before. And it was one of those aha moments. And long, long, long story short, after going to many doctors, after lots of tests and lots of this, it was determined that they took my gallbladder out, which only made matters far worse, a lot worse.
Wow.
So I had to learn how to eat better. And knowing what has happened with our food industry, whereas, you know, back in the 50s, we started with the TV dinners and foods of convenience because women after the war decided to stay at work. And they had no time to make dinners. So there's prepackaged, processed, frozen, freeze dried, instant dinner, just add water, and boil and bag dinners and all of that comes at a price. It comes at a price of our health. And if you want to take it even further, that affects our nation because lots of people are unwell and unhealthy because of the foods that we're eating because we don't have time to eat right. And then we have to go to the doctors and then the price of that goes up and then insurance and health insurance. And you get where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right there. Although, you know, you brought up the bread and I know that you're both having a glass of wine over there. With some good French bread. There's nothing like it. And I'm somebody who loves to cook comfort foods. And I'm the one cooking the Thanksgiving dinners and the Christmas dinners and the veal parmesans and the the briskets and the, you know, just those wonderful foods that my mother used to cook. I still love to cook. And we feed people at our house. We have a table full at least four times a week. I mean, we have neighbors and friends that live just right here, and we're always cooking for other people. We're cooking for our adult kids who also live right around here. So, you know, somebody's always here eating. My husband, on the other hand, he doesn't cook comfort foods. He cooks, he does the barbecue thing or the saute type of food. But what I find is that when we eat foods that are from the earth foods, so when we eat, you know, chicken, beef, vegetables, those kinds of things, not things in boxes like the macaroni and cheese in a box or things like that, which we never eat. But when we eat the good foods that are without all of the things you just talked about, Becky, the fillers and the, you know, all the things that preserve the food and all of the additives, then we feel better. I'm not saying it makes us any thinner. It should, but those are other choices. But, you know, I also do find, as Judy said, I so agree with that. Having food be something that brings people together is just so true. And it's such a wonderful experience. It is actually my very favorite thing to do in the world is to sit down with other people and break bread. It is just, I'd rather do that than anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we could all do that, the world's problems would be solved, don't you think?
But you know, what gets frustrating to me is that the availability of fresh, wholesome, real food that our great grandparents used to grow and can and have because there wasn't another option, is not readily available to the masses. You know, when people are of lower income, or let's say on welfare, you can't feed a family by buying organic food or the healthiest and freshest foods. And it's so, and that not eating healthy food contributes to the health problems of the nation. Do any of us three women remember going to kindergarten through even 12th grade with anybody having peanut allergies?
No, I don't remember that. I don't remember anybody having those allergies in my class.
No. And so allergies have increased exponentially over the last 30, 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. And it's the food. Mm-hmm. It's what we're putting in our
body. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's so many toxins that are, I don't mean to cut you off. I apologize.
No, that's good. But you're right. Because eating my system has become so sensitive that if I eat an apple that is not organic, it bothers my system. I'll feel nauseous. But if I eat an apple that is organic and I try to look for those without pesticides, it's the pesticides that are really wreaking havoc with people's bodies. And I am not a farmer, so I don't understand the great intricacies of farming. And I don't know how you would farm without some sort of pest control. And I honestly don't know how well the natural pest controls work. I just don't know. But what I do know is that my system can't handle pesticides. And it's causing a problem. Like the milk, you know, Judy, you're going to laugh at this. You have watched this as I have. And Linda, you might be aware of this too. But girls, Judy, you and I watched girls grow up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the girls matured so quickly and developed beyond what I had ever experienced in my middle school, high school days. I mean, some of these girls, by the time they hit senior or junior year of high school, look like they're 21, 24 years old. They are well endowed, 5'10", and Amazing. And from everything that I've read and been told about the foods, the hormones that are put in foods, from drinking milk to eating nuggets and other foods that are just pumped with growth hormones and things, they get in your body and they make a difference, and not in a good way.
You know, I gotta tell you, when I had cancer, I had breast cancer, and I did the whole nine yards. I did everything that the doctors told me I was supposed to do. I had my rounds of chemo. I had a lumpectomy. Then I had a mastectomy, and then I had 5 years of tamoxifen. I did everything that they told me to do. But in truth, you guys, I felt like they were just treating the symptoms. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the symptom was the cancer, and the problem was that my immune system failed. My immune system did not fight off the cancer. And so I kind of started to do research, and I realized all the toxins that I was putting in my body. And it's pretty easy when somebody looks at you and says, I think you got to go get your affairs in order, that you're like, I'm going to do anything. I'm going to do anything I can to raise my kid, right? To stay around. So it was like that. From that day on, I said, I'm going to do a detox. I want to flush out everything that's toxic in my system. And I did it through, liquids and food. And all sorts of, all natural, all organic nutrients and minerals and supplements. And then I didn't let anything cross my lips that was not organic and pesticide free. And it was interesting because I felt phenomenal. And when I went into my surgery, I did this like 2 weeks before my surgery. And I went into surgery and had my surgery and went home the next day. And I got up the next day and I felt great. I felt great. And I said to Brian, go ahead, go on to work. I'm fine. And they sent the visiting nurse to check on me. And so I got up, showered. You know, I still have the drains, you know, and all that nasty stuff from the surgery. But I just put on a little tank top, some cute little sweats. I put my makeup on. Anyways, the doorbell rings. I go down there and I answer the door. And the nurse is like, hi. And I'm like, hi, come on in. And she said, I'm, Lucy, the nurse. I'm like, great, Lucy. She goes, I said, I'm Judy. She's great. She goes, where's the patient? And I said, well, I'm her. And she said, no, Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You can't be the patient. I'm like, I am the patient. And I truly believe that I healed quicker. I healed more wholly. More and completely, and I've been able to be cancer free, and I think it's because I stopped putting all the toxins in my body.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Fighting every day against the cancel culture that wants to silence and erase us. 5 years on the air, and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Welcome back, beautiful ladies. Speaking of beautiful, it's interesting to learn what men think is considered beautiful. And in an article that was actually brought to my attention by Linda, surprising physical traits in women that are irresistible to men. I have to say that differently. They are irresistible to men. Some of these things I have found fascinating, interesting, comical. One of the things that I'm discovering of late that appears to be attractive is large behinds. Very shapely and large behinds. Am I putting that delicately enough? Gluteus maximus of the maximus. And I mean, sometimes those backsides are really, really large. Like you have to have special genes to cover all that up. And I personally don't understand the attraction, but apparently that is a thing. And large lips. People are injecting something, fillers, into those lips, which I just think look like duck lips and just look so strange and unnatural. I don't like things that look unnatural. Women, apparently men are drawn to women wearing red. I can't wear red. So that must be, you know, the whole thing from what my life has been is that I don't look, I'm blonde. I don't look good in red. Bust.
Good in red. Bust.
Me, I don't look good in red. No.
Who told you that?
I looked in the mirror.
I think you'd look great in red, a beautiful blue red, maybe not an orange red, but a nice red with a blue undertone to it.
Well, we'll have to go shopping and we'll see. Okay. We'll see what I find. But bust size, you know, that one I think has always been there. I think men prefer larger breasts, and we'll just leave it at that. Let's see the other things. Large eyes. I'm not sure what that would be, except maybe that denotes being friendly, I would say, is someone with large eyes. And eyes can be very beautiful. They can, some people would say they reflect the soul. So eyebrows is something. Men are more attracted to thick, bushy eyebrows. I kind of chuckle a lot, especially since masks hide your mouth and nose. Eyebrows are very prominent. And it seems of the last 5 years or so, eyebrows are a big thing. And I do mean that literally. I see women darkening and adding volume to their eyebrows. And I just see a bunch of women walking around looking so surprised. They have that surprise look on their face because their eyebrows are so dark and bold. And then if someone has had eyelid surgery, they look shocked because their eyebrows are closer to their hairline than they are to their eyelids, actually. But men apparently find that attractive. So posture is a big thing, and I certainly can understand how someone might not be attracted to someone who slumps as opposed to someone who sits up straight, because that shows confidence and good core muscles, I suppose. And then there is the attraction to shades of hair. And okay, like I'm blonde, and that just should say it all, right, about the blondes. I know, here's an interesting thing, personal note. My husband notices women's hands, and he likes women that have long, pretty fingers and nails. And he'll comment to me sometimes if we're out for dinner and a wait person might have short, stubby fingers with bitten nails or something, and just go, ew, ew. So that's something that he thinks is attractive, as a woman's beautiful hands. So things that maybe, like when I think about even in my grandmother's times, things that may have been attractive to men, hairdos, they wore their hair different. There's fashion, but then there's also the physical features. We've come a long way, baby, don't you think?
I think we have. And I, you know, there was a survey that was taken about what the ideal female body would look like. And it comes out that it would be somebody 5 feet, 5 inches tall, weighs about 130 pounds, and has a waist that measures 26 inches. So for perspective, that's about an inch taller and 40 pounds lighter than the average American female with a waist that's more than 12 inches smaller. So let's get real here, guys. I definitely think that, you know, we have a view of what beautiful looks like in America. And it certainly varies all over the world in different cultures, but right now we're just talking about America. But it's not really the reality of how most women look. So, you know, it's funny because you can turn this around to men as well, because there are ideals that we as women have about men, and they are just as unrealistic in height and weight and chest circumference as is the female version. So kind of the thing that people are liking now is more that dad bod, you know, that they're a little bit heavier, and it's a little bit more realistic, and they're calling it the dad bod, and they have dad.
But wait, they like that?
Pardon?
They like that?
They do like that. I like that. I like a guy that has some meat on him. But
that's so funny that you said that.
Body. Well, listen, I gotta tell you a funny story. When I had my ideal of who I wanted to marry, this is my ideal guy. He's going to be 6'1" or 6'2". He's going to have a full head of hair. He's going to, you know, work in these certain industries that are going to be helpful to me. I need a guy who can do things around the house and fix things. I need somebody who can fix things. And who I'm married to, by the way, is somebody who is short, bald, and can't fix a thing around the house. if you've got a dead body, he can handle it right away for you. But I will tell you that he's the most attractive man in my world. Why? Because of his humor and his brain and his consideration for me and his love for me. And those things make him, to me, the most attractive man in the world. So while we're looking at all of these outward signs of being attractive, and oh my gosh, I'm like everybody else. You know, I like a good looking guy, Chris Hemsworth, or, you know, Toby Keith, or, you know, there's lots of different country guys I could name. But the reality is that after you get done looking at them, you got to talk to them. And that could be a deal breaker.
That is true. So Chris Hemsworth does it for you, huh?
He's pretty cute.
How about you, Judy?
Okay, come on. Now I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, of course.
Name. He was good High School Musical. Come on. You know who I'm talking about?
Yep, I do. And I can't say his name either. But I know. But I know who you're talking about.
I think he's so cute.
He was also in The Greatest Show.
Yeah. But I also think that Daniel Craig is a hunka hunka burn in love. He is a cutie patootie. And he reminds me of funny because
kind of guy.
Yeah.
Zac Efron.
Yeah, there it is. Zac Efron. Ooh, baby. But I really prefer Daniel Craig. He is so handsome. He's in the Bond movies, you know?
Yeah.
And he reminds me of Brian a little bit. But I think that I agree with you, Linda. It was really Brian's humor that made me completely fall in love. I mean, we would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And that's really, I swear, one of my favorite parts of him.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely wonderful. But what we think of beautiful, you know, what is beautiful today, and the differences in generations, I think that, you know, tattoos are a big difference, right? Tattoos were, you know, when I was growing up, only really, it was like sailors had them and some, you know, drug addicted people, right? It was the burnouts had them, right? in high school and so forth. But now it's a whole different culture. They love tattoos now. And Brian will say, I can't imagine having a tattoo because he has a lot of moles on his body. And he's like, I've hated these my whole life. I can't imagine, you know, putting something else on my skin that I hate. I think they're wonderful. And the whole eyebrow thing. Do you guys remember Brooke Shields and her eyebrows? I had eyebrows like that. And then we went to Cheryl Teague, right? With no eyebrows, right? She had no eyebrows. Whole pencil thin. I remember my sister shaving her eyebrows off and I was thinking, you are crazy, crazy. Mm. But now I watch my daughter. She has these intense, heavy, heavy eyebrows and she colors them all in. And I think, oh my gosh, you know, she looks at me, how do my eyebrows look? And I want to say they look good. I do. But
come out of your mouth.
I'm like, they're a little much. Right. but it is interesting to me. When I was, you know, back in the day, I used to model. We lived in LA and I used to model and you didn't want a big butt. You know, it was, I remember though, you wanted 36, 24, 36. What a winning hand. Oh, she's a brick. How? Right.
Yep.
That was the deal. And now, like you said, you know, that big booty, they want that bigger booty, which I have in space now. I'm so happy. I got it. But
well, and another thing, the tattoos is one thing and the piercing is a whole nother thing. That people find attractive now, where I just can't even look at it. But, you know, each to his own. I discovered when I was younger that I didn't want that really handsome, handsome guy. They were great to look at, but I was never comfortable going out with the most handsome guys, even if they would ask me out, because they always had such egos and they were always so much about themselves that they weren't about me. And you know, that turned me off at an early age. And so I started looking at people more for, like I said, their humor, their character, those kinds of things. And you know, a not so physically beautiful person becomes extremely beautiful to me just by who they are inside. It just comes through. It comes out. It comes out in their eyes and their smile. And you know, that those are the special people to me. So I wish that we'd get off of the whole looks thing as much as we are in America about looks. I mean, look at the Middle East. They've got all their women covered up in burqas and you know, you can't even see what they look like. So I don't know how you even pick somebody at that point, but that's a whole nother thing. It's just that people become beautiful from the inside out instead of from the outside in.
I think the standards of beauty today are outrageous because they're unattainable. And men are very visually stimulated. And society, sort of by default, pushes men to being shallow because society tells them to expect this in a mate. And I think it's unfair and unrealistic. It's really not attainable for most women unless you were born 5'11" and with all those right, with everything in the mm-hmm. right places and all the right shapes. It's not attainable. I'm 5'4.5" if I didn't have a little curve in my spine, which right there makes me, you know, odd person out. But it's not fair. And I greatly appreciate, Linda and Judy, what you've said about literally getting to the heart of the matter. Looks are fading. Beauty is fading. And it would be a great thing that for future generations to realize it is truly what's on the inside. I mean, you do want to find your mate attractive, but you want to find your mate lovable. Moreover.
Okay, I got to share this with you. My friend Lisa, whom I absolutely adore, she has two sons, and she shared with me once and I died laughing. She said, "Yep, I've taught my boys that beauty fades, you know, pretty fades, but crazy stays."
I like it.
Be careful out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody should have told Harry.
Yeah. Right? I was thinking it.
Sorry.
I was thinking it.
I think that the handsomest man or the most beautiful woman can become pretty ugly if they don't have anything inside to go along with the outside. So, you know, give me the humor and the consideration and the laughter is a big thing with me. I love laughing with my husband, and I love that we can have conversations day and night and day and night. We never have nothing to talk about. You know, we can converse about anything. And those are the things that fulfill me. It's not about looks. I don't even wish he had hair. It doesn't matter to me. You know, it just doesn't, it's just not, it wouldn't be him. He's who he is. And you know, the truth is, I know that he feels the same way about me with all my imperfections. So to me, that is beauty.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.